I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Rachel Gorry. Rachel is a young mum with three beautiful daughters. Her husband, Daniel, was diagnosed with cancer when he was 27 and died just 18 months later in April. Rachel has documented their journey and has been so open and honest about the realities of grieving a soulmate. She has an incredible support network around her, and today she speaks to me about everything she's been through over the last couple of years. Her reality now is something she never imagined was waiting for her, but Rachel gets up and faces every day head on and keeps Daniel's spirit alive. She does it all for her girls to keep things as normal as possible. And I think you'll agree after listening to this episode that she is one of life's real superheroes. Rachel, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Georgie.
So we've been in touch over the last, I would say, 12 weeks, all through COVID.
Yeah.
I was like, how will I get a mic to you? How will we do this? But luckily, I think it was really important for us to be face to face for this conversation and to actually meet each other.
100%.
So we're social distancing in a studio.
We are, yeah.
And your gorgeous sister is here, Amy. It's so nice to meet you. Moral support, I'm sure, and your family are, I'm sure, have grown so incredibly close. And I'm sure you were a close family before, but it's only in times like this of absolute crisis that you realise how much closer you can become.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
How much has their support meant to you over the last while?
I genuinely wouldn't have been able to get through any of it without my family, Daniel's family, and our very close friends. Like, as you know yourself, it's so hard and so traumatic, and you're up and down, and I'm trying to be there for Daniel and I need support. So all my family were there to give that to me, and they were absolutely phenomenal. Like, they really were.
I remember when I was sick and like seeing my mum go home at the end of the day to her house or my stepdad, and I knew that it wasn't like they just sat down on the telly or sat down on the couch in front of the telly and just got on with their lives.
Yeah.
They're going home in pain, and almost that's when they let it out, when they're not with you.
With you, yeah.
So you had so much to juggle. Like you said, you were looking after Daniel, your three beautiful girls, but you're also probably a little bit worried about your family.
My family
too.
Yeah, because I know, like, I was worried about my ma because she was living with us, and I was afraid she didn't have the support because she was obviously not going to lean on me. But she needed support too, because she was like trying to keep me and the kids together, and I was trying to be strong for Daniel, and it's just a domino effect on the whole family. But no, they're all been fantastic.
And is your mum still very close?
My mum is still with
you.
She's still with me. I don't think I'll ever let her go.
I know. Where would we be without our mums?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, she's been brilliant.
So I listened to your interview with Ray Darcy.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely amazing. And I was chatting to you before you went on to his show and saying he's amazing. And I could really tell during the interview that he was minding you and he had really done his homework. And I'm sure that you just felt so reassured by that.
I was so nervous going in, and the minute I went in, he just made me feel at ease. You know, he was just it was just like chatting to a friend across the table. Do you know what I mean? You forget about it. Other than the mic being in your face, you kind of forget it's being on the radio. You know, it was just like just having a conversation. He was so warm, and I just felt like he cared. He listened to every word I said. You know, it was amazing. He was very good, yeah.
I first became aware of you, my friend Denise Kenny, and your friend too.
Oh, yeah.
Said, you have to follow Rachel. She's amazing. And I went over, and your page is so beautiful. Rachel Gorry, home decor. So it's all about this gorgeous house that yourself and Daniel built together. And I was just so devastated to see
I suppose, what's happened in your life over the last 2 years, but you've been such a pillar of strength. And I want to get into, I suppose, how much the Instagram community can support. And people might say, why are you sharing your story on Instagram? Me personally, I shared my story on Instagram and I found it to like the benefits to it to be such an empowering thing to do. And it's, it opens up an amazing community of people.
Definitely
support.
Does. Yeah, it does.
Doesn't it? But let's talk about before Instagram and before everyone knew your name. Yeah. You met Daniel when you were 12 years old.
Yeah. So we moved from Dublin down to Offaly, my mother, my father and the four of us, and we moved down and Daniel knocked on the door to see were we coming out to play a game of Tipticán, and everyone was kind of out on the road, and we went out and we played Tipticán. That was the first time I met him. And because you live in such a small area, like we live in a little village, so everyone that's in around the same age would play together or hang around with each other every day. So I've spent nearly every single day with him since the age of 12, and we were in the same classes in school. So it's mad, like it's crazy.
The definition of childhood sweethearts. And what was it about him that you just loved? Did you love him from when you were 12, do you think?
I don't know, because he was more like a brother to me, because mm-hmm. we were such good friends, and I was so thrown when he asked me to be his girlfriend. We were 16 when he asked me to be his girlfriend, and he rang me and asked me, and I said, I'll ring you back, and I hung up on him, and I said to Amy, Daniel's after asking me to be his girlfriend. I just didn't think he fancied me like that. And she was like, ring him back and tell him. Yeah, so I did. And that was it. But I did always find him attractive and I did kind of fancy him, but like love at first sight, definitely no, I don't think, you know, like. But he's tall and dark, and like he's very handsome, he was funny, and that's what I was kind of drawn to.
I think that's one thing that I think really comes through about your relationship, is that you had so much fun together right up until the end.
Yeah.
And so when you were 16 you started going out, and like it's such a I have a friend, Layla, actually, who has been with her husband since she was 16 as well, and you go through so much. There's so much growth there.
Yeah.
And clearly your relationship just became stronger and stronger. And was it very much where your families kind of intertwined from the start?
Yeah, you see, we obviously know, because mine and Daniel's house, we only live a couple of doors away from each other, so our parents would know each other. And sure, I was going down into Daniel's house since like at the age of 12, so it was just mad, wasn't it? Like, it's just, we all hung around with each other. The families knew each other. They really liked Daniel. Daniel's parents liked me. So it was,
wow.
It was grand.
It was meant to be.
It was.
And you got engaged when you were 20?
20, yeah.
Yeah, and what was that day like?
So Daniel, we were living in a mobile at the time. So I had just had Leah, and Leah was a few months old, and we were living in the mobile, and Daniel wanted to propose Christmas morning, and the pipes all burst in the mobile the week before Christmas with the frost. So we had to move into my parents' house, and he was like, I'll do it Christmas Eve, because he was so nervous to do it Christmas morning in front of people. So he bring me out for a meal Christmas Eve, and he had this big box, and he said, I have your Christmas present, you want to open it? So he handed it to me, and I opened it, and then there was a smaller box and a smaller box and a smaller box. So I opened it, it was a little card and a ribbon around it, and he was going on about Liverpool tickets, going over to see the match. And I was thinking to myself, if he's after getting me Liverpool tickets, that's practically for himself. I said, I'm going to kill him. So I opened up the note and I said, will you marry me? And when I looked at him, he was holding the ring, and so that was it. I was delighted and I burst out crying, and I think the first thing I said to him was, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want
to
marry
me? He
said,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that was it, and went home absolutely delighted.
Wow. And what was it like to be a mum so young?
I think I was always meant to be a mother. Like, I always was minding little kids on the road or whatever. My ma said, you're going to be the one to have kids first. And like, all my sisters and all would say the same thing. Like, I was just always so motherly, and it was all I wanted to be. And we had three girls, and just...
Wow. And Leah's 9 now.
She's
so
9,
what,
yeah.
Did you know that she was a girl before you had her, or was it a surprise?
I didn't know. Leah was a surprise, and the other two girls, Holly and Hannah, I found out that they were girls. And I wanted to be more prepared, because I had kept everything from Leah to pass down and to you. So I found out the other two were girls, yeah. But Leah was a big surprise.
Wow. I'd say it's so incredibly special to be raring sisters. Is it?
So nice. They're really close. And like with Holly and Hannah, especially the age, like they're really close. And just like us, we would be really close, me and my two sisters. And it's just so nice to have that. Now, I would have said, like to have a boy, just a girl and a boy, but the three girls, like, I'm absolutely blessed. Like, I think I have three best friends for life with, with the three of them.
And they're such a gift to each other. They'll always have each other. They'll always mind each other. Yeah. I think that's why, like, I really want a second baby for my Pia, just so she has somebody there just that will always be there for her. It's so incredibly special.
It is, yeah.
So your wedding was in Spain. Did you kind of, were you wondering whether you should get married at home or abroad?
We didn't know kind of what to do, and we had booked a holiday with the family, and we just said, right, we're going on a holiday. And then my ma was like, why don't you just get married over there? Like, that's how quick it was. I think it was like, was it 30 weeks to the holiday or like 28 weeks? And I was like, will we? And then that's just how it happened. We just rang up and got a wedding planner because my mother and father had been there the year before, and they said, oh, we've seen someone get married and it was lovely. So it just all kind of happened so quick. So it was just kind of like my immediate family and Daniel's immediate family, and then a few aunties and uncles and cousins, and that was kind of it. And then we had a big do when we came back. It was kind of like the afters of a wedding, like where you got your DJ and the big sesh.
Yeah, oh, it's such a lovely way to do it, because I think when you're away, everyone's kind of in that holiday mode, and everyone's like 100% in, you know.
And I won't lie, a lot of it had to do with money as well, because like we were 21 getting married, so we were like, this just makes so much more sense, like, you know, we're cutting the wedding in half basically, like price wise. So we were like, let's just do it, and that's the way we did it.
And when you were 21 getting married, were all of your friends going off like traveling and doing
it up? And I was there like baby and getting married. It was just so strange.
It's so funny, isn't it, the way everything kind of happens for a reason. And you were meant to have your three kids.
I really believe everything happens for a reason. I genuinely do believe that. And it says a lot, because I know Daniel was taken away at 29, and some people might think, how can you think everything happens for a reason? But I really do believe, like, we experience so much and fit in so much in those 29 years. Well, of his life, but, you know, since we were together. And I really think that's why.
Wow, so amazing. So you were obviously saving for this beautiful home that you built. You built that home from scratch.
It was Daniel's mother and father's and his uncle's land. It was like their back garden. And he always wanted to build. So we bought a house. We came back from our holiday and we bought a house the following year. And this is what I thought was my forever home. And we did it all up and I loved it. And Daniel was like, will we sell it? And I was like, what? And he was like, sure, we'll sell. I always wanted to build. And his dad was like, you won't get the planning to do it. So I didn't want to seem like the bad guy. So I was like, yeah, sure, we'll sell and whatever. Apply for the planning first. And then he rang me and he was like, the planning was approved. I was like, oh my God.
Do you know what? I've only learned that as the years have gone on in my marriage, that when they suggest something that you just don't want to do, you just go, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you think in your head, this is never going to happen. So you go, yeah, yeah, that's a great idea. And then it does happen.
Yeah, he was like, it's after going through, I'm going to put the house up for sale. And I was like, oh no.
Oh, so you did all that. And did you have to move out of your house then while you were building?
Yeah, so because we needed the money for the sale of the house to put towards the new house. So we sold the house and we moved in with Daniel's parents, and we said, right, we'll go on one last holiday and then we'll come back and we'll build the house. And then we went on the holiday, and then that's when everything just got turned upside down.
Oh my God, Rachel.
So we were homeless, basically, you could say, because we were just after selling the house. We didn't know, oh my God, do we carry on with the build of the house? Like, he mightn't survive to get through it all. Or when I think back, I do wonder, how did we get through it all?
Is it a blur?
Bits of it are, yeah. It's not until someone says something to me, or, you know, I might hit an Instagram video or post that I'd put up, that I can't even remember coming on, you know, like, because it is such a blur. Like, even when people are talking about the morning he passed, and his ma or dad might say something, and I'm like, I can't remember that, you know. Bits of it is definitely a blur.
It does it feel like sometimes you're like on the outside looking in?
100%.
Like, just, yeah. Tell us about that holiday, because you said that Daniel didn't feel right. There was something kind of off with him before you went.
Yeah, he was getting kind of like just acid reflux, really, and a bit of pain in the stomach, but nothing that you'd go, oh, we need to go to the hospital. It was just kind of mild, a little bit discomfort. So he went into the doctor and they gave him tablets for antibiotics for a gut infection, and that didn't clear it up. And he went a couple of times. I think he was in the doctor's like 5-6 times with the same thing, and they eventually then said, right, we'll put the camera down and give him a day for that. But Daniel's nanny had a fall in the meantime and ended up in life support, and they said, look, she's going to pass away any day now. And he wouldn't leave her side, and I said, your appointment's downstairs, just go down. But he would not leave of her side in case she passed. And then we buried the nanny, and we were supposed to fly out on hospital today, fly out to on holidays the day she was buried, so we had to postpone all till the following day. And we flew off, and then 2 days into the holiday, he was just in agony. And we went to the doctor twice in one day, and she wanted to see him again. And then she said she gave him tablets and he was feeling a little bit better. But that night, it just got really, really bad. And we went to a private hospital, and they were like, no, we need to transfer you. There's something not right. So they transferred him, and the doctor just said, look, we think that you have cancer and you're internally bleeding and it's so bad, you're going to need 2 blood transfusions. They said you could have died if you didn't come in. So they gave him 2 blood transfusions, and they wouldn't tell us anything else. Like I said, like, you think it's cancer, can you not find out? And she said, we can't take a biopsy of it because it could make the bleeding worse, and our main concern is now to stop the bleeding. But their English was very broken. So one of the doctors, I think he was like the head doctor, he'd come in and he kept saying, it's bad, it's very bad. But that's all he'd say. And I'd say, like, what is very bad? What is it? And he was just like, it's bad. And then he'd say, you'd have to wait till the nurse comes on to speak English. But she'd never really give you much more information than, look, we don't really know until you go home.
Oh my God, it's such, like, weird timing that he got so bad while you were abroad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you think, like, oh, it must be the house, you know, we're stressed, you know, your granny's dying, like,
yeah.
You know, you just kind of write these things off, especially when you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
You just never would think such a thing.
No.
And I'm sure, especially when you're in Portugal and the doctor's saying it's bad, you're going, yeah, right, we'll go home to our doctors and they will sort this out for us.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking.
So did you have to come home early from the holiday then?
They wouldn't let us fly. Daniel was in hospital. We were only gone for a week, and then Daniel was in hospital for 8 days, and we had to try and get more accommodation. That we couldn't book flights because they said, look, we can't tell you until the day we know Daniel's being discharged. So we used to have to pack all our clothes up and go to the hospital with our suitcases and say, is he being let home today? And then they'd be like, yeah or no. And then if they said no, we'd be ringing looking for accommodation, because the hospital was an hour away from where we first had stayed. So we had to get accommodation nearer the airport or the hospital, and oh, it was just an absolute nightmare.
And were you on your own with the kids? Or
I was with Daniel's parents, came with
okay.
me, and we were with Leah. We didn't bring the 2 smaller kids.
Okay.
We said we'd bring Leah with us. And then they said, right, we'll let you home today. And we had to go to the airport, wait around the airport, try and get flights home. Landed, went straight to James's, and that's when we found out the truth, really. That's when it all came.
So you were in A&E for a very long time with a letter in Portuguese.
Yeah, 32 hours in A&E, yeah.
How did you get through at that time?
We were trying to sleep. We were like the worry of it. When I went into the nurse and I had explained to her, and I said, I explained what the letter was, and you could see the word like tumour and stuff was wrote in English on the letter. And she said, look, I need to get it translated. And I had explained to her what had happened, and that he, you know, was in hospital and was bedbound and he wasn't allowed to walk and was really weak and this and that. And he was still left for 32 hours. And she was like, look, it's probably, look, the age of him, that cancer you're describing to me, that's an old man's cancer. Does he smoke? Blah, blah. I said, no. So she said, look, it's probably just a stomach ulcer. We'll have to wait. So that's what happened. They put the camera down, and you probably know this, you just know. When they're coming in, they're looking at you, and one of the nurses was like, oh, is this your beautiful wife, Daniel? And just the way she was just being so overly nice to me, and I said, oh my God, I know, this is just bad news. And they just said, look, it is cancer, and it's very bad, and you'll have to come up and tomorrow and see the professor, and he will go through everything with you.
God. And it was esophageal cancer?
It was, yeah.
Which you don't really hear much about, do you? Like,
no.
You must have been like, what?
What exactly? That's exactly
what
I was
like. You hear breast, prostate.
Yeah.
And this, like you said, the nurse said, this is like an old man's cancer.
Yeah, that's what they describe it as.
So you have to go home with this information and then go back the next day.
Yeah.
And those days and nights are like pure torture, aren't they?
They're absolutely brutal. Daniel had to stay. They wouldn't discharge him. He had to stay.
Okay.
And I had to go home, and he dreaded me having to leave the hospital. So I had to go home and leave him there, and went back up. We went up and he was like, you don't know what questions to ask, you know. So I just asked, is it treatable? I meant, is it curable? And he said, oh yeah, it's treatable. So I thought, oh, he's going to be okay. It wasn't until the next day that the professor was like, look, I'll be brutally honest. This is stage 4. You know, Daniel, you are going to die. You would have a max of 5 years. They were kind of thinking maybe in around 2. And she's a lovely, really, really lovely professor. But they say things so normal as if like they're just saying, oh, hi, how are you? It's kind of like, yeah, you're going to die. This is going to kill you. And can you just go down and get bloods there? It's just so, and I'm sitting and the tears are just streaming down my face. Daniel's rubbing my leg, telling me it's going to be okay. And he's so strong. He's didn't even flinch. And it's out of this world. It's just, I can't, there's no words to describe, to describe it.
It's so weird. And then life goes on and then you like pay for your parking and you get into your, it's like, how is this happening? Yeah. How am I standing here with like a page to go and get bloods when you've just told me that my life will never be the same again? Yeah.
That's exactly all it is.
And like, did you feel like you needed to be strong for Daniel? Like, are you trying to look for how do you look for the positives even?
I was, as she had said that, I was really trying to stay strong for him, but I couldn't. No. Like, I was absolutely bawling. He went in to get his bloods. I had stopped crying. We went down. He was called straight in to get his bloods. And I was sitting outside the waiting room and I just burst out crying and I was sobbing on the chair, and two ladies that were waiting, they came over to me and they were consoling me and they were crying. And I think I was on the phone to my I was actually on the phone to my mother and I was telling her what the professor had said, and they had heard what I said, and I was just sobbing. My ma said she couldn't understand anything I was saying. She said, you were just sobbing down the phone, I didn't know what you were saying. And the ladies came over to me and were just hugging me, and we actually drove home, myself and Daniel. Like, I don't even know how he drove home, and we just cried. As soon as we hit the motorway, I think he just cried the whole way home, and that's when it really hit him. And it was just horrific to see a grown man cry anyway. And Daniel wouldn't be an emotional person, and he just sobbed all the way home.
And was he still in like so much pain? Like, he's trying to deal with that as well as this information. Like, and I suppose it's those two ladies that like put their arms around you in the waiting room that day. You'll never forget that.
No, I won't.
For as long as you live.
No, just the kindness of people. That always kind of stands out. You know, people being so kind to you. You'll always remember that. And they were just so lovely and coming over and rubbing and hugging me. Yeah. And I didn't know them from Adam. And I just...
You got so much comfort from them.
Really did, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how, I suppose, when you see somebody in... like a state like that it could mean the world to go over and just offer like a hug.
Yeah.
Even though in COVID-19, are we ever going to do that again?
Yeah, we're probably never allowed.
Jesus
again.
Christ, I just want to like hug people. So you go home and you're trying to. I don't even know what you tell your kids or.
We told Leah, we kind of said to treat him down, but the two smaller ones had no idea what we were talking about, so they kind of didn't pass any heed. But we just said to Leah, look, Daddy is really, really sick, and the doctors are trying really hard to make him better, but they don't know if they can make him better. So she kind of accepted that, and then it wasn't until one day she asked why did her nanny pass away, and we had said, Daniel's nanny, which she called nanny, and Daniel said, oh, she was really sick. And she kind of looked at me, and I knew, as soon as he said, I knew, oh my God, she's going to ask now, is Daniel going? So she said, are you going to die, Daddy? So I just said, look, Leah, Daddy, he might die. But I said, the doctors are trying really, really hard. So she just accepted that on the chin, that was fine. And it wasn't until Daniel got really bad that we were like, right, we're going to have to sit down and we're going to have to tell her that, you know, you're going to die. We need to prepare her. So we sat her down and we were like, we need to talk to you. So she came in and... we just said, look, the medicine isn't working that they're giving Daddy. And I said, Daddy's going to die. And, oh, she just screamed. Like, she was saying things like, why can't I be sick and why can't I die? And I don't want my daddy. How can we have a family without Daddy? She was just howling. And it was absolutely horrific. So that was a really difficult conversation. And then Daniel bring her to bed. And she clung to him. I have a photograph on my phone because I went down, the two of them were asleep in the bed, and she just wouldn't let him go. She clung to him, and that was probably the worst moment of my life.
Yeah. Oh God, it's like, because you're trying to be strong, you know, for your child, like, because you do anything for your kids.
You would, yeah.
To take their pain away. And like, it must have been so hard for Daniel that day, looking at his little girls, like her heart breaking like that, you know. But you've spoken about like how strong he was, and it seemed like he was very, like, quite accepting of it. And I don't know if that's the right thing to say or not, but he seemed like he didn't let it take his humour away.
No, he was funny right till the end, and he would joke about it, you know, whereas, like, sometimes he'd even say, Daniel, don't say that, you know, because his jokes sometimes are really inappropriate. And I was like, you can't say that. But he was just like, why can't I say it? It's me that's going through it. And he just kept his humour. And I think that's what kept us going, was the humour side of it. And I think there was a time where we thought, he's going to beat this. Like, we genuinely thought, there's no way, because he was so healthy. And he, like, I started doing loads of research and getting loads of books and changing up his diet rapidly. And his first scan was positive. And I was thinking, I wonder, is this the diet? And we were going hell for leather. And the things that he was eating and I had him on was, like, absolutely unbelievable. You would never eat it, like. And then it wasn't until he started his chemo that he couldn't eat the diet, because it was all, like, you know, juiced beetroots and, like, all this kind of stuff. And he couldn't eat it. And the doctor said, look, if he loses too much weight and he's not eating, then he's not going to be able to fight the disease anyway. Mm-hmm. So he will die anyway. You're better off letting him eat, because he needs his strength to fight the cancer and to be able for the chemo. So it was like, what do you do? So we literally had to say, right, you may forget about the healthy eating and just go back to your normal diet.
Mm.
And hopefully we can beat it. But
yeah, God, it's something I actually forgot about chemo, is that they weigh you and then they give you the certain amount of chemo, but according to your body weight. So you have to kind of stay the same weight so that you can cope with the amount of chemotherapy they're giving you every week. I remember during chemo as well, like, I just wanted potatoes and big kind of hearty meals and things like that, because it just knocks you, like.
It does, yeah.
And in the meantime, you started your Instagram. Was that, were you still in the process of building your house at this stage, or was it built?
No, we were in the process of, it was built and we were in it. So it was January, the end of January that I set up the page. And Daniel wanted me to set it up because he was in hospital quite a lot, and I used to stay with him and they would let me stay overnight with him in hospital. So I always wanted him to talk to me, or if we were in chemo and we might be in there for 8 hours, I'd be like talking the ears off him, and I think he just wanted me to leave him alone. So he was like, you need to set up an Instagram account for the
house. You need a hobby
you need to get a life. And so he'd be watching, like, Liverpool match and stuff, and I'd be like nattering on to him, and then he just wanted me to shush.
It's so draining.
It is. And then to imagine me, like, no, like, sitting beside him. So he was like, I'm going to set you up a page, because I was considering doing it for our other house that we had done up. Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh no, I won't bother. And then he said, you should do it for this house, and then people will be asking you questions where you got the couch or whatever it is. And he said, it'll keep you busy and it'll keep you, like, you know, away from me and give me time to look at my matches and stuff. So he set me up and he said, oh, you need, like, a name, or you need whatever. And then I said, oh no, don't bother setting it up. He kind of put the name on it. And then I said, oh no, Daniel, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, it's a silly idea, don't bother. So he didn't. And then I was showing Amy something on Instagram the next morning, and when I clicked onto it, it was like, you have now successfully updated this account. And I said, oh, and I said, Amy, oh my God, what did I do? And then people start adding it straight away, like people from my area. And then Amy just said, I'll leave it. So then I was in such a hurry to post the picture really quickly, I just started taking a few of the kitchen, and that's just how it.
Wow.
So it was actually by mistake.
And it's incredible. And obviously everything you did on your Instagram is down to your hard work and your content. But he was putting things in place, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Which is, you are doing, I suppose, what you're doing now on a daily basis because he kind
because of him, yeah, 100%.
Because he wanted you to do that.
Yeah, and he took full responsibility for it. He took all the credit, Georgie. It was nothing. If he heard you saying that.
Why did they always take the credit for everything we do?
He always took the credit. He was like, you're welcome. Like, he was like, that's because of me. Because I started talking about Daniel's situation and his story and in hospital and kind of going through a few things. And then my followers would just skyrocket. And he'd be like, you're welcome. And then people would start noticing me, like bigger bloggers say that I would follow. And my friends would ring and say, oh my God, this person's after sharing your page. And Daniel would be like, Rachel, you're welcome. And I'm like, oh my God. So he always just took the credit for the Instagram, always.
Wow.
And it's not until all the messages start flooding in that people are like, you're helping me, that you're like, oh, so I'm going to keep going with it, because I'm, even if I help one other person,
yeah,
like, it's going to be amazing. But the support has been absolutely phenomenal. Like, it really has.
You must have the fastest growing Instagram in Ireland, like, ever.
Thanks to Daniel.
Oh yeah, geez, yeah. We better not forget.
Better not forget. Yeah, it just took off.
Yeah, how many, like, you're up over 150,000 or something now, is it?
Yeah, it's a, what is it?
I think it was a, yeah, something like that.
So that's because you're so yourself. There's no bullshit. And I think, you know, you laugh, you cry. It's so real.
Yeah.
You're not putting on a front. You're not putting on a brave face. You're just yourself.
I said, Daniel had said to me when, because I always said when I set up the page, I'm never going to come on and speak. Like, it would be pictures and that's it. And then sure, I was on talking and then now people can shut me up. I'm sure people, yeah, like, if she doesn't stop talking. But I just said, he said, be yourself and don't change for anybody. And I said, I will come on and I'll be as, sometimes it might be painfully, you know, uncomfortable to watch or hard to watch for some people. But I said, I'm going to keep it real and I'm going to be as brutally honest on the page as mm-hmm. as I can. So even when some people might come on and say, oh, you're such a great mother and your kids are great and they play together, and I come on and I'm like, no, that you see 2 minutes, like, you don't see them killing each other, and you don't see, yeah, like, I like to say it is normal what you, because it's very smoke and mirrors, it can be, you know. So you might look and say, oh, she has a perfect life and her kids are so good, so I want to come on and say, no, actually they were killing each other 20 minutes ago, or, you know. And I want to say it's normal and it's okay to come on and say, you know, I don't have a perfect life, you know, that type mm-hmm. of way. So I just want to be really brutally honest and keep it like that, keep the page like that.
Yeah, I think we all need that sort of realness in our yeah. lives. When you start sharing your story, like, through an illness, I think the days can be so long when someone is sick, yeah, and so hard and so depressing. I mean, you have all of these thoughts, you're kind of feel so cut off from society, your life that you once knew is gone. So it's so nice to have this little kind of community of people that you can chat to and keep your mind busy a little bit. That's yeah. that's why you speak about it.
Yeah, oh, 100%, yeah.
And how long did Daniel have from his diagnosis until he died in April?
18 months.
18 months.
Yeah.
So fast.
Very fast. And it went a lot quicker than you think, 18 months, but that 18 months just flew, like, just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you were able to do so many special things together in that time, like... Yeah. Make plans and
we
write
plans
things down.
And we made memory boxes and letters to the kids, cards to the kids. We did, like, every significant birthday, passing a driving test, passing exams, getting married, the kids having their first babies. We wrote out all cards for everything he wrote.
Did
me?
You? Oh my
yeah.
god, that's amazing.
And we thought it'd be lovely to have. It was very difficult to do. We made Build the Bears with his voice in it, telling the girls how much he loves them and how proud he is of them. I haven't given them to the kids yet, just because I'm not ready to hear him constantly around the house. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some days all I listen to is his voice on my phone, and then there's some days I can't play a video because it hurts too much.
Yeah.
So I still have the bears there that I didn't give them. They're like, one is in a little football kit, so the bears represent Daniel. So they're like little Daniel bears, with his voice on them. So we have them and boxes of stuff we did, frames and pictures, and we tried to think of everything to do for them.
And you have, like, so much time to get to those stages that yeah. I think it's really important that you don't rush.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You do everything when you're ready. And I remember when my Jamie lost his dad, he'd come home and say that he kept ringing his phone in the car.
Oh,
do you, is there kind of parts of you that does that? Or I'm not asking if yeah. you ring his phone, but, like, you know, you just want just for 1 minute for him to still be here.
Yeah, we ring his phone. His father rings his phone as well, just to hear him. And wants me to send all the videos that we have just to hear his voice. Because I think that's what's so great as well, that we had 18 months to take videos and to, you know, make special memories. And so all the videos, that's all we have left. And I looked at them the whole time and we cherish them, and his family cherishes them. And we'll always have them, and it's so special.
Wow, so special. So obviously Daniel passed away then during this global pandemic. Did that make things so much harder?
It did and it didn't. It was so hard because his family couldn't come in to say goodbye. And, like, my sister there and my brother and dad, they would come down and they would look through the sitting room window, because we moved him into the sitting room. and he was in his hospital bed, and they could just look through the window, and his family could only look through the window. And it kind of wasn't until the last week or the last couple of days of his life that the doctor said, look, you can let people in, only his immediate family and his best friends. So they all had to gown up, suit up, and masks and sanitizer, and go in for a couple of minutes to say their goodbyes. And that was tough. Mm-hmm. Not having, say, all my family and my friends' support, that was very hard. Mm. But also, Daniel's weak, so obviously you're not allowed anybody in the house. That was really special. So I didn't have... I know it's so nice for people to be able to come pay their respects, but I got to spend 2 days in the house with Daniel, just me and Daniel and the kids. I pulled up a kitchen stool to his coffin and I sat with him. I didn't leave his side until we buried him. I didn't miss a minute. You know, you have to be entertaining people when they're coming in. They're shaking your hand.
You're worried about the food and the...
I just had to worry about Daniel. And I sat, and, you know, I was like doing his hair, and I was spraying aftershave on him, and I just sat and I just talked to him the whole time. The kids would come in and tell stories and kiss and hug him, and I slept in the sitting room with him for the 2 nights, and I will cherish that. And if the COVID wasn't going on, I wouldn't have had those 2 days, because I would have had an open wake and everyone would have been in. And I cherish those 2 days that I had at home with him, as difficult as other parts of it was, but I'm so grateful that I had those 2 days, because I think it's very special. I think it's very important for the person as well to get that time alone with your loved one, and I really think it's very important.
And how's his mum and dad?
Absolutely devastated, like heartbroken. You know, Daniel was the eldest, then he has one brother and that's it, and they're just absolutely heartbroken, you know. Mm. It's very hard.
Who's 29,
yeah,
so young. For the last 2 years, you've been like looking after him and doing everything, and now you're just, you know, with the kids in the house, can't leave, can't see, have your friends over. Like, was that so hard for you?
I think that's where the Instagram came in, and why I came back so quick, because I was so busy all the time.
Yeah.
And then you go from being so busy, and you know yourself, when you have like hospital appointments and treatment, and Daniel needs to be fed, and the kids, and then it goes to nothing.
Yeah,
my ma's dealing with the kids. I have nothing to do. So the Instagram really helped me with that, really helped me keep busy, and I was able to come on. I used to find it really difficult to speak to my ma, my sisters and stuff, because when I was getting upset, I can see the pain that they're going through, and I didn't like to see them in so much pain that I felt like when I'm coming on, I'm talking to my phone, I don't see that I'm talking to anybody.
Yeah.
It's just me sitting in my wardrobe or in the bedroom on the phone talking to myself. And so that's when I just said, right, I'm just going to keep it to Instagram, and I'm just going to keep going with it. So that was kind of my saving grace.
Yeah, and Denise Kenny calls people like her therapists. It's like, it's so important to say how you're feeling out loud.
Yeah.
And yeah, I totally understand what you're saying about your family, because you don't want them to worry any more than they're worrying. Even though I'm sure they would not object if you wanted to pour your heart out. And how are the girls now? Are children, like, have they surprised you in terms of resilience? You know, the way they say kids are so strong, and...
They really surprise me. They're doing great, really. Like, they will have, you know, their bad days, and they will obviously sob, and I will just sit and hold them and we'll talk. But most of the time, they're okay, and they're just, you know, they'll go up and say, oh, I want to go up to the grave to show Daddy, like, a picture I drew, or... You know, it's just so normal for them. Oh, Daddy's in heaven. You know, the way they'll talk. Leah, like, she obviously understands a bit more. But she's, as well, doing great. And, like, I let them know, Mammy's sad today, and I'll cry, and I'll cry in front of them and let them know that it's okay to cry. And then we'll laugh, and we laugh every day. And that was very important to Daniel, that we did that. And when everything opens back up, I will bring them back into the play therapy and stuff. I think that's very important.
Mm.
I want to try and help them as best I can. We read books about parents passing and stuff, and I think it's all really helping them. And they're so resilient. Like, kids will, they just bounce back and they'll just take it in their strides. And they have, it is up and down, but overall they're doing great.
And I think even when your heart is broken or shattered, to wake up and see their beautiful faces every single day, like, that puts a smile on your face.
It definitely does, yeah.
No matter what you're
and
going through.
It gives you a reason to get up out of bed. Like, I can't lie in bed and sit and wallow. I have to get up because I have 3 children that need to be taken care of. And so you have to. You don't have a choice. You have to, and you want to keep going for them.
And do you think the counselling really helped you prepare for what was coming for you?
I definitely think so, yeah. And I really think it helped Leah understand with the way that they described the chemo and the treatment work. And like they said to her, they blew loads of bubbles, so the room was full of bubbles, and they gave her a sword. And they were like, right, you need to, the bubbles are the cancer cells, and you have the sword and you're the chemo. Now you need to get all of these bubbles. But she couldn't get them all. And they said, and that's what the chemo is like. So sometimes the medicine can't get all of daddy's cells, and then someone's left, and that's how it happened. So she was coming home and she was all talk about this, and she understand that the medicine mightn't be able to get all the cells because, mammy, I wasn't able to get them all. And that's how she understood then that the medicine's not working, and that's what she would reference it back to. So it was absolutely brilliant for her to get her little head around what was going on.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Because I spoke to Nikki Whelan on this podcast before, and she brought her kids to play therapy just to help them understand what was happening to her mum. And it, like, stuff you would never think of in a million years. They just know how to explain
brilliant.
It to kids,
they're
don't
brilliant.
They?
Yeah, they do.
And will you yourself, do you think, go back to counselling?
I will, yeah. I had been having a couple of phone calls with my counsellor. She had rang me, and I think three times we had had a conversation. And she said, we're opening soon. So she said, I'll text you. The next appointment will be sitting in, obviously like this, social distancing, but sitting in. So that's the next step. I don't think there's any shame in getting help and talking and counselling. I think it's very important to do that, and I know some people are reluctant to do it, but if I could advise anybody, it's really helped me speaking and being so open and honest about situations, because they rationalise it. And I remember she said something to me, I can't even remember what it was, and I was saying it to my mum, my sister, and my mum said, I said that to you last week. And I said, yeah, but it's, when it's coming from a stranger, when it's coming from not a family member, you know, my mum's like, I said this, but you're like, oh yeah, like she makes sense in what she's saying, and it's not just a family member trying to make you feel better, you know, the way they word things. I would recommend counselling to anyone to go and get extra. It can't do any harm.
No,
you know, that's the way I look at
it.
It can't do any harm.
I think it's really important as well when you talk about grief and how it's different for everyone. And I think most people respect that it's different for everyone. But I think it's really interesting to see that, you know, when you say, you know, sometimes I laugh and sometimes I'm lying on the floor and I can't get off the floor.
Exactly.
And bad days as well, that what I found out when I was sick is that the bad days, you don't wake up at 6 a.m. and go, oh, it's a bad day today.
Exactly.
It can happen at any point of the day where you're just going around as normal, and then boom, it hits you and you're floored by it.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the kind of roller coaster of emotions? Like, it's exhausting.
It is very exhausting. It is. And you don't know, like, that you could be having a great day and it could be a song might come on the radio, or the kids keep playing Daniel's playlist, and it's very painful for me to hear it in the house. And that could put me then into a bad day, because I'm thinking of a memory of him maybe singing in the car or just messing around dancing in the kitchen, and something so small like that can just bring me so down, and I'd be so upset and like that. I need to go into the bathroom and maybe sit on the floor and cry for an hour over, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just,
mm-hmm.
it's so up and down, and I could be laughing 1 minute and literally 1 minute later, haven't I been like that? Mm-hmm. Just burst out crying. You know,
yes.
It's just so up and down. And like you said, it's just exhausting.
It really is, because you're just, it's so hard, I think, to manage like a family and then just feel so desperate sometimes for just to be out of the pain, but you just can't, and you have to give yourself time. I'm sure everyone keeps saying that to you. Are you like, shut up, I'm never going to feel okay again?
Everyone does say, you know, give it time. And I'm hoping that the pain, I never thought you could feel physical pain, not being hit, like not being actually touched physically, but I'm physically in pain, and my chest hurts me with just the grief of, you know, the loneliness and the... It's just so difficult.
It's just, it's so real, and you just can't get away from it ever.
No.
But I think you're an amazing person, and people really love you and really support you. And I hope that you feel some comfort in that a little bit. And
yeah, it's lovely. The messages and all have been absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
And I think we'll all be with you on this journey. And I know that you'll some days you'll never get away from the loneliness. You could have, you know, all of these followers on Instagram and amazing supportive family, but none of us know how you feel really deep inside. But giving yourself the gift of time, like, can only, please God, help in the long run. But Daniel, let's talk about Daniel just for the last bit of this podcast, because I think he'd want that.
He would definitely want it all about him.
An amazing guy. So I from our chat, I would describe him as funny, as strong, as really, like, I got the impression he was the man of the house and wanted to look after his girls all the time. Is there any other words that you would use to describe him?
He was just incredible. He was just, he did a lot more than I thought he did. I used to always say, like, you do nothing and give me a hand and everything. And it wasn't until he passed, I was like, oh my God, he does so much. Like, he was so hands-on with the kids, and he was such a great help with the kids. And he was just amazing in, like, every sense of the word. And I even do say to my mom, my sisters, I miss even, like, the little rows you'd have, you know, like, because he was so sneery, you know. And I'd say, like, about picking up his shoes or whatever, and that's one of the things I really miss, just the sneering and just
the little pointless, the arguments,
all them little things,
the first world problems.
I really miss all of that, just the normality of just a family, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think, though, he put some amazing things in place that he will never be forgotten.
Never.
And your girls will never. And even if they can't remember, like, specific things, I think it's really what I hope, like, if anything had happened to me when I had cancer, was, like, I'd love for Pia to feel, like, it's so hard to describe, but, like, my spirit or my presence, or, like, I don't think they'll ever forget that part of him, how he made them feel.
Yeah, that's why I think it's so important to keep talking about him, even though sometimes it might be really hard. But we talk about Daniel all the time, you know, and I think it's so important, because I know sometimes people might say, maybe we shouldn't, you know, because it's too upsetting to talk about him. But I'm like, no, because why wait and you leave and then nobody's going to... Someone doesn't truly die until you totally stop talking about them. And then, in a sense, you're like, oh, yeah, they're dead now. But Daniel will never be dead around us, because we keep his spirit alive every single day, and we talk about him every single day. And I love talking about Daniel. People, I think, are afraid, oh, I won't bring Daniel up, because it does. Sometimes it'll upset me. But like that, I can have a little cry with you here now and wipe them away. And I laugh with you. Like, I love talking about Daniel, you know, and I will always talk about him every single day.
I think it's really important for people who have lost someone to talk about them.
Yeah.
And when you meet someone on the street, not to talk about everything around the person. Just go, how are you?
Yeah.
It goes a long way, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. I think I feel for people, because I'm sure people see me coming and they want to even pass, you know, go on the other side of the road, just because they don't know what to say, because you don't know what to say to people. But like you said, just say, like, oh, how are you? You know, and if I don't want to talk about it, I'll brush it off and say, oh, look, I'm grand or whatever. Or I might, you know, just talk, you know, I think just mention it. Just the elephant in the room, you know it's there, I know it's there. Just say, how are you? That's all you have to say, you know. And it does go a long way when someone just says, how are you?
What did it feel like to just have your community come out and do that guard of honour on that day of his funeral?
They were absolutely incredible. Not only just for the funeral, all the build up to Daniel being sick and just the things that they did. And I will never be able to repay them. And I've never been more proud to be part of such a small community. Like, they just rallied around and they did absolutely everything that they could. And I was just, we were both so, Daniel said, I didn't think as many people liked me. And, you know, he would be laughing and I'd be like, I can't believe, like, all these people. And then when we were coming down and I seen all the Liverpool flags and people were out in their Liverpool jerseys, and it was just kind of all up the street. Our neighbours were up, and then up the next street, everyone was just out. And then right outside the church, there was guard of honours, like the women I play football with was doing guards of honour, all the lads and his friends and men from the area was all out in theirs. And it was lovely. I know it sounds so weird, I keep saying it's lovely and it was his funeral, but it was so lovely to see. And it was just everyone, the love, and it was really nice. And I'm forever grateful. There's nothing I'll be able to say that will do justice for what they did and what it means to me.
Yeah, and I think, like, through COVID, we're all so much more grateful for our neighbours and for you, what they did for you that day, you'll never ever forget.
No.
And the love they have for you and the love that you have, you know, for your family and your friends, they'll carry you through this.
Definitely,
on the bad days. but you mind yourself, and I hope that we will get to meet again sometime soon.
We definitely will, Georgie.
You're absolutely so beautiful. Oh, stunningly beautiful.
I am absolutely cake and makeup, Georgie. Oh, don't be fooled.
You look amazing. Mind yourself. Thank you so much for today.
Georgie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more on my story, follow me on Instagram at georgie.buff.